This episode is brought to you by Curie Briefs, the smartest 3-minute read in medicine. Think of it like mental floss for busy clinicians. Sharp, concise, and clinically relevant. Check it out today at Curie.md. And now, on to the show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Curie. I'm Andrew. And today, we're discussing the quiet revolution in American healthcare. Hospitals are buying up physician practices at a stunning pace, fundamentally changing how medicine is practiced and, crucially, how much it costs. Now, picture this. You walk into your doctor's office for your annual checkup. It's the same building, same receptionist, same doctor you've been seeing for years. But something's different. There's a new logo on the wall, and the paperwork has a hospital header. And when the bill comes due, it's 15% higher than last year. So on today's show, we're going to follow the money, unpack the data, and hear from physicians living through this transformation. Because if you're in healthcare, this isn't just a business story. It's your story. Here's a stat that should make you sit up. In 2008, hospitals owned about 28% of all physician practices in the United States. But by 2016, that number had shot up to 47%, nearly half. And post-COVID, the buying spree has only accelerated. We're not talking about a few big headline-grabbing deals here. This is happening practice by practice, specialty by specialty, in every market across the country. It's kind of like watching a massive game of Monopoly. But instead of hotels on the boardwalk, it's your local cardiology group getting absorbed into the regional hospital system. So why should you care? Because unlike most business consolidations, this one has a peculiar characteristic. You see, when hospitals buy physician practices, prices go up, not down. And I mean way up. When hospitals acquire physician practices, studies show that prices for physician services jump by 14 to 15%. And that's not over years, that's immediately. So to put that in perspective, if you're an OBGYN whose practice just got acquired, that delivery you performed last month, let's say for $3,300, is now being billed at $3,800. Same doctor, same patient, same procedure. The only thing that changed was who signs the paychecks. But here's where it gets really interesting. You'd expect, and I certainly expected, that with all this consolidation would come efficiency, better coordination, and maybe some of those famous economies of scale we all learned about in Econ 101. But study after study finds the same thing. No improvement in quality, no better patient outcomes, just higher prices. One physician we spoke with summed up the reality of this situation.
Loss of autonomy was the biggest change. Not being able to schedule vacations when we wanted, not being able to hire and fire when we want to, and having to deal with administration.
Actually driving this trend. It's not about making healthcare better. It's really all about leverage. Think about it from the hospital's perspective. Every physician practice they acquire is another referral source locked in and another negotiating chip when they sit down with insurance companies. In markets where one hospital system owns most of the physician practices, they essentially control the chessboard. Insurance companies need those doctors in their networks, so they end up paying up. And guess who ultimately puts that bill? But there's another factor at play here, and it's so absurd it sounds made up. It's called site of service differential, and it works like this. Medicare and private insurers literally pay different amounts for the exact same service, depending on whether it's billed by a physician's office or a hospital outpatient department. So imagine getting an MRI at Dr. Smith's Independent Imaging Center. Maybe that will run you $500. If you get the same MRI at Dr. Smith's Imaging Center after it's been acquired by the hospital down the street, maybe that will run you $1,200. It's the same machine, same technician, same radiologist reading it, but a vastly different price. It's like charging more for a hamburger because you ate it in a building with a fancier sign out front. Now, I don't want to paint this as entirely one-sided, because some physicians have found real benefits in hospital employment. Listen to this perspective.
I think it became nice because we had access to more resources. Certainly, our referral rate went up and we're able to access in-house specialists that we had to refer out to before. So overall, from a resource standpoint, it was helpful. But it did add some layers of red tape to certain things. When you're part of a smaller practice, you can have a little bit more autonomy. But overall, I think being a part of a larger health system did come with its benefits of being able to access more resources.
Yes, you get access to hospitus specialists, and yes, you might get better IT systems, but you also get committees and protocols and administrators and meetings about meetings. But for some practices, especially in underserved areas, hospital resources can make a real difference.
I do think that the acquisition of our clinic was an overall net benefit for our patients, period. It has allowed for a higher level of access to care. A lot of patients are enrolled in what we call a value-based care system that is implemented from the top down from our acquiring hospital system that identifies patients who need closer follow-up, and they have a caseworker or social worker calling them to get them in to be seen. We also have access to our corporate umbrella of advertisements where, you know, you'll be driving on the highway and see a billboard advertising our clinic, which is something new. So I do think it has improved our access to care for our patients, which has been nice.
This is the promise of consolidation at its best. Resources flowing to where they're needed and coordinated care for complex patients. But here's the thing. These success stories appear to be the exception, not the rule. So, you might be wondering, if these acquisitions are driving up healthcare costs without improving outcomes, where are the regulators? Well, here's a fun fact about antitrust law. The federal government only reviews mergers above $101 million. But your typical physician practice sells for maybe $2 to $5 million. Even a large specialty group might go for, let's say, $20 million. So these transactions fly completely under the regulatory radar. It's kind of like having a speed limit that only applies to Ferraris, while your Toyota Corollas can go as fast as they want. And by the time anyone notices the traffic problem, the roads are already clogged. The Federal Trade Commission knows this is happening. They've written reports about it. They've wrung their hands about it. But without the resources to review thousands of small deals and transactions every year, They're essentially watching from the sidelines as American healthcare restructures itself, one small acquisition at a time. Let's talk about what these price increases actually mean. A Harvard study found that patients treated by hospital-owned practices spend about $280 more per year than those seeing independent physicians. Now, that might not sound like much, but multiply it by the 150 million Americans with private insurance, and you're talking about $42 billion in additional healthcare spending every year. That's not money going to breakthrough treatments or cures. It's not funding research or improving outcomes. It's just markup. It's the healthcare equivalent of a convenience fee, except you can't opt out. And it compounds. Higher provider prices lead to higher insurance premiums. Higher premiums lead to employers shifting more costs to employees, and higher employee costs lead to people delaying care. It's a cycle that touches everyone, whether you realize it or not. There's another cost to this consolidation that doesn't show up in the price data, and that's physician burnout. Multiple studies show that employed physicians report higher rates of burnout compared to those in independent practice. They see more patients per day, they spend more time on administrative tasks, and they have less control over their schedules and practice patterns. One physician put it simply,
"I was in residency when our hospital system merged with a neighboring hospital. There was a great deal of confusion with the transition. We did not receive very many updates. We were waiting for the merger to affect us, as the other hospital had another residency program as well. But nothing really seemed to change, other than the lettering on the door."
That sense of confusion, of being swept up in changes beyond your control, it's emblematic of how many physicians feel about the corporatization of medicine. You went to medical school to treat patients, not to be employee 3,847 in a health system bureaucracy. Despite all this, the acquisition wave shows no sign of slowing. A recent survey found that 78% of independent practices had been approached about selling in the past 2 years. And the pressures are real. Declining reimbursements, rising costs, administrative headaches. And for young physicians especially, the traditional path of joining a small practice and eventually becoming a partner is slowly disappearing. Instead, they're entering a world where hospital employment is increasingly the only option. And it's a fundamental shift in what it means to be a doctor in America. But there are glimmers of resistance. Some specialists are forming quote-unquote supergroups, large independent practices that can negotiate as equals with hospitals. And direct primary care, where patients pay physicians directly, is growing. These models are still small, but they represent attempts to preserve some independence in an increasingly consolidated world. So here's what it all comes down to. We're watching the systemic transformation of American medicine from a profession of independent practitioners to a corporate enterprise. And it's happening one acquisition at a time. And each independent acquisition is too small to make headlines, but collectively they are reshaping how healthcare is delivered and ultimately paid for. The evidence is overwhelming that this transformation is making healthcare more expensive without necessarily making it better. It's reducing physician autonomy, potentially contributing to burnout, and limiting patient choice. Yet this trend continues, driven by payment systems that reward bigness over value, and enabled by regulatory frameworks designed for a different era. For physicians navigating this landscape, understanding these dynamics isn't just academic. It's essential to making informed career decisions. And for all of us as patients, I think it's crucial to understand why healthcare costs keep rising, even as the care itself doesn't improve. The question isn't whether your doctor's practice will be acquired. Statistically, it probably will be. The question is whether we'll find ways to preserve what's valuable about independent medical practice while adapting to new realities. That's going to take more than policy papers and congressional hearings. It's going to take physicians, patients, and policymakers all recognizing what we're losing and ultimately deciding what's worth fighting for. Because at the end of the day, this isn't just about business models or payment rates. It's about the kind of healthcare system we want. One that prioritizes relationships and outcomes, or one that prioritizes market power and margins. I think we all know which one patients and physicians would choose. The question is whether that's the choice we'll actually get. Thanks for listening to Curie. I'm Andrew. Until next time, stay curious about the forces shaping healthcare, especially the ones hiding in plain sight.